Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another interview with Susan Green, part two. I call Susan the greatest wrestler because she has withstood the test of time. She's done a great job. She's got so many friends. Susan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, John. How about you?
I'm doing good. All right, I wanted to talk to you tonight about the early days. I know you gave us a brief overview a day or two ago, but I wanted to get some real details about how things were. Tell us, why in the world did you want to become a wrestler? What was the real reason that drew you to this great sport?
I guess what really drew me, I'm wanting to see the world without having to join the military. You know, I had a brother, an oldest brother, that was hurt in the Army back in the 50s before there was even more time, per se. And he was released on medical, so I was like, I didn't want to take a chance on that. But getting paid and seeing the world and not having to stay in one place very long was one of the things that really drew me to it. But being athletic, you know, I wanted to be up there and show people that there, you know, it took a lot of physical ability to do what a female wrestler did.
Right. So now, who did you go to learn your profession? Who was the first teacher that you had?
Joe Blanchard. I pestered him from the time I was 5 years old when I started going to the matches with my father there in Corpus Christi. We actually drove over from my hometown of Alice, Texas, which was 48 miles one way, and we'd watch the matches on Thursday, and then, of course, I'd have to be up ready for school the next morning on Friday, you know, and my mother said as long as I was able to make school and not be late or miss, that I could go with him on Thursday nights. So I started pestering Joe, and he sat there and would tell me, you know, well, don't you think you need to get a little older? But just from the time I was 5 years old, every time they had females there, I'd go up and tell him, you know, that's what I want to do. I want to be one of them. And then he'd always tell me, you know, you've got so much else. So. But I actually wrestled for Joe Blanchard for 2.5 years before I came out to the East Coast to work under Lillian.
Right, that Lillian being the fabulous Moolah. That's great. Now, how old were you when Joe started training you?
I was 14 years old. I actually had to have my sister drive me to the sportatorium there in Corpus Christi, where the other gentleman that he was training, because I was the only female that he ever trained. There was not another female that he ever took under his wing to be trained. And the gentleman that I know is Bob, everybody, he became Blackjack Mulligan, was in the class with me being trained there in Corpus back in 69.
And that's why you talk about Blackjack Mulligan a lot, because you were close friends because you trained.
Yeah, we trained together, and you know, there was so much that we did. You know, whenever we'd see each other on the road, it was like we'd pick up talking just like we were still in training class.
Right. Now, Blackjack Mulligan went on to great fame and fortune with a number of wrestling promotions and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But now, have you ever had the opportunity, now this is a crazy question, have you ever had the opportunity to wrestle Blackjack Mulligan or wrestle with him as a partner?
Never did. He was... Whenever we met again, he was in the tag teams up in the AWA under the Vern Gagne promotion with Blackjack Lanza. And then whenever he came back down into Texas as a single, you know, I would be on the road. And when I would come in, they would use me, you know, just as an individual, because I drew more people being on an individual card or individual match than I did being there with somebody as a tag partner.
Right. Now, who was your first match with? And tell us a little bit about it, if you don't mind.
First match was against Marie De Leon in Victoria, Texas. 35 of my family members, which was my two brothers, two sisters with their husband and their children, and my mother and father and friends, all drove to Victoria, which it was 125 miles one way, to see me wrestle my first match against Marie. And of course, she had wrestled for Mula and had quit. And so I was taking on a 10-year veteran. And it was my very first match. So she basically beat the tar out of me, you know.
Now, how old were you at that time? Were you 14?
It was on my 15th birthday. I actually had it on. Joe Blanchard gave me my very first match on my birthday. My 15th birthday, so it's not hard to remember.
So what
when I got the tar beat out
so
of
what all happened? What all happened in that match? A little bit of what all?
I guess one of the biggest deals I was only 112 pounds and 6 foot one, and she was 5 foot three and 135, and I was petrified. Walking out there, and we actually wrestled at the Victoria Auction Barn, where they auctioned the cattle, and just walking out through the people, and there was probably 300 to 400 people there that night. That when I stepped in the ring, I was petrified. You know, she had control of the match from the very start, and was able to throw my little heavyweight 112 pounds around like it was a sack of potatoes, and she pretty much had control of me and to do whatever she wanted, you know. I won't say I totally went blank, but I can only remember certain things, and remembering that I could do leg trips because I had long legs and I could trip her down to keep her away from me. But she eventually ended up hooking me to pin me, and all. So, she pretty much had her way with me during that fight.
Yep. Now, what was your second match? That's actually probably the most important one, because you got over the butterflies in your stomach on the first match. So what was the second match like?
Second match, they brought Kay Noble down from Amarillo, and Kay was married to a boxer. I don't know if he was semi-pro or if he was pro, but he was a boxer, and she could use her fist. When she was just showing me a whole different side of wrestling that I didn't have any idea. I helped myself better because it was about 3 months later. It was on the, I think it was the Thanksgiving holidays, because my birthday was in August. And it was Thanksgiving break that I had my next match, because it was that I could do it on weekends or holiday breaks from school. And I fared way a lot better against Kay Noble, but she also let me know that I had to be watching out for the fist to fly, that not everybody was going to be trying to grab an arm bar or a top wrist lock or a step over toe hold. And whenever I'd walk up in there and try to go in for the collar and elbow lock up, you know, she'd just pop me on my chin and give me a gaze here and there and have my eyes rolling. But I learned that there was another side of wrestling that you had to be prepared for, and that was the fist.
Okay, so when was your first win in a match? That's a That's, I guess, the next question.
Okay. Guess the, my first win was against Evelyn Stevens, and it was probably the Easter holidays of 1970, because I started August of 69, and I guess her cockiness and my stubborn head, and she was much shorter than I was, and she didn't outweigh me. I might have been 115 pounds, but I towered way over her, because I think she was like 5'2". So whenever I saw that I could put the my strength of being so much taller than her, and then Bobby Shane, that trained and worked out with me, he would come in on Thursday early to work out with me and Black Jack Bob on Thursdays before the matches on Thursday night there in Corpus Christi. He had taught me how to do the bulldog, and that started being my signature move is bulldog. And when I hit Evelyn Stevens with the bulldog, I pinned her, and I when the referee was holding my hand up, it was like I was kind of shocked that my hand was being held up, and I kept pulling it down, and he says, "You don't understand, you won." Joe would come back and said, "You know, why'd you keep jerking your hand down?" And I said, "I don't know."
Yeah, that was probably the most surreal moment of your life at that time, wasn't it? That you had won a professional wrestling match. And so I guess the last detail I'll ask you is, who did you wrestle next? What was your next victory? Because obviously you had a string of victories that propelled you to really superstardom.
I guess my next victory would again been against Barbara Galinto, Bob Goggle actually flew me in during the summer break of the 70s out to Kansas City, and I wrestled Barbara Galinto. Joe Blanchard was throwing everybody at me left and right to where I wasn't going to have the same girl. I wasn't going to know that their technique of wrestling, because most of these girls was trained by somebody else, and they knew their own style, and he was actually hoping that I would take the scholarship that I was being looked at and scouted for swimming for the University of Texas. And I sat there and said, my parents said, all I have to do is graduate from high school and I can do what I want to do, and I want to wrestle. And Joe had made Tully Blanchard graduate from college before he let him, he could referee, but he would not let him wrestle until after he got a degree from college. And he didn't think it was fair because I was getting the fight and so young. And then I guess my next biggest victory that I had after Barbara Galinto there in Kansas City, Joe Blanchard flew Betty Nicolai in, and she was holding the Texas championship at the time, and I beat her for the Texas NWA championship.
What year was that?
'71. It was just before I graduated. Yeah.
From high school.
And just before I graduated high school. Yeah.
So that would
I was 16, maybe 17.
Wow.
But
That is incredible. So how long did you hold this women's championship?
I left there and since I'd said I wanted to be a full-time wrestler, he said, you're going to have to go out to Lillian Ellisor out in South Carolina. So he drove over to my parents' house, and we called her, and she said, "Can I be there on June the 5th?" Of course, I said I didn't graduate till May 31st, but my parents had given me my car for graduation, and my mother rode out with me to Columbia, South Carolina, and that's where I was met Lillian Ellisor. She had one of the other females come meet me off at Interstate 20 to drive me into her area, her house and gym and everything, and got there, and believe it or not, I did not know who Lillian Ellisor was. I did not know the Fabulous Moolah because she did not wrestle in South Texas. She did not wrestle in Texas. So, you know, the people that Joe Blanchard brought in was Kay Noble, Barbara Galento, Betty Nicolai, Jean Antone, Evelyn Stevens, Mae Young, you know, so I didn't know Mildred Burke, you know, I didn't know the Fabulous Moolah.
Right.
So,
Did you ever get to wrestle Mildred Burke or at least get to meet her and talk to her?
I met her, talked with her, actually worked for her in 74. She was really nice to me. She didn't charge me any PC. I went to Japan for her a couple of times, went down to Mexico a couple of times, and then I had left Moolah in 73 and was gone about 4 months. And then I said, you know, when am I going to get to start wrestling some of the other states? And Mildred had sat there and said, well, I thought you knew that Moolah has that kind of tied up. And I said, well, you know, I still want to wrestle the other states. And I did wrestle Southern California a few times for Mildred there for the LaBelles and Olympic Auditorium and all, but it was rare, you know, because a lot of her girls, they had other jobs and it was, she didn't have the same setup and she didn't make the same demands that Moolah did on her girls, if you know. So it was, if you got down to Mexico or over in Japan, of course you were there and you stayed there for that time, but if you was doing Arizona or New Mexico or that, you know, it got to where they may show up, they may not. I got to work with Jane O'Brien and Jackie West. In fact, me and Jackie West did tag teaming together because we look so much alike and look like sisters. So they ended up booking us as cousins when they used us because we look so much alike with the long blonde hair and all.
All right, well, that's really great. Now, you were talking about working for Moolah. We've got a little time, so if you could give a tale about how it was working for the Fabulous One. I mean, there was the good and the bad of working for Moolah. Is that correct?
Yes. I will be sitting there saying you that me and Moolah had an understanding between each other. She didn't care for me, and I didn't necessarily care for her, you know, but she kept me in the ring and got me in front of the promoters and the fans, and that's what I wanted, and I agreed to. A lot of people are saying 20%. Now, when I worked for her, she got 30% off the top, you know, which meant I still had to pay for the gas and the motel and my food and everything else, and if the car broke down, I had to fix my car, you know, so, but she got 30% off the top, so if you made $200, you only made $140. You know, and she was known for doing that for a week at a time. You know, you'd go in for a week, 7 days, and you'd make $200 for the week. Now, back in 71, the motels that we normally stayed at, they'd be $25 for a week. So, you know, we got extremely cheap hotels, but they were cheap hotels. You know, I mean, it wasn't anything that you'd want to ride home and
you know, say, Mom and Dad, I'm here in this place.
Yeah, but
exactly.
She did not like us riding with the guys. She didn't like us going out, hanging out with the guys. You know, I had my own car, so the girls rode with me. We made the towns, and all, and if you got caught going out with guys, then you could guarantee whenever you got back, you're going to be spending time in the gym working out. And there was a couple of times that she'd end up making us do 2-a-days where you worked out at 10 o'clock in the morning, then you had to come back at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and do another 3 hours worth of training. And it wasn't, you know, she wouldn't necessarily be mad at you. She might be mad at somebody else, but, you know, everybody had to pay. And when I was there, she had 27 of us tall, full-grown females, and she had 6 midgets. So, you know, at one point, she had the ruling hand on the female wrestling here in the States and Canada. Yeah, and then she got hooked with Japan. Then I think after I left in 79, she got a contract with Mexico and was sending the girls down to Mexico. But I sat there and said, I didn't care for Mexico or Japan that much. But after I worked for Mildred, I learned how to make the money. You know, if they wanted me to do grand opening someplace, well, that just cost you extra money, you know, and I would put a price on how much you wanted for me to do a grand opening. And if they wanted me to go out to dinner with them to be seen, well, you know, I'd put a price on going out to eat dinner with them. If they wanted me to go make TV talk, you know, I put a price on it. So I might tell Japan that I'd go over there for $2,000. And this was after I left Midler. I'd go over there for $2,000 for a week and have one match, but I'd do all this other grand openings and things for them, and I could easily come back with $6,000 in my pocket, you know, because I just, Mildred taught me how to work to make the money for them. And, of course, when I worked for Mildred, she didn't charge me a penny because she sat there and said that I helped her girls learn so much more about wrestling, you know, as far as the holds and the idea of why you wanted to do this and the reason you were staying with this hold and you didn't jump from the top wrist lock over to a step over toe hold every 3 or 4 minutes. You know, if you grabbed an arm, you stayed with that arm for the whole match. You know, and if the other person had your leg, they stayed with your leg for the match. And I will tell you, I wrestled Johnny Mae Young one time, and my brother had to drive me. I was 15 years old. He drove me to Phoenix, Arizona. I was in the 11th grade, and she beat me to death. I was 112
really?
Pounds, and wherever her fingers touched me, when I got back, I was purple. I went to school after that in Christmas holidays, and I was still purple where she had grabbed me. The one and only time that I ever wrestled Mae Young, and she liked to beat me to death. And my brother drove me all the way to Phoenix, Arizona for that match, and I made now this is the killer. I made $25. My brother drove me from South Texas, Corpus Christi, all the way to Phoenix, Arizona for $25.
Well, I guess as Maestro, the great wrestler who you and I are both wonderful friends, I guess he would say that Mae Young had tendon strength. She was just strong as all get out, right?
Oh, yeah. She started off in the circus where she challenged the men, and she beat the men in the circus. You know, she did not start off with female wrestling. She started off in the circus or the carnivals, whatever you want to call it. But the men would pay $25 to get up there and have a 10-minute match with her, and she would have them beat within 10 minutes, you know.
Wow.
She
was a great wrestler, wasn't she?
Yeah. Mildred Burke was another one that started off fighting men you look back, Mildred just had the natural physique of if you saw that on a female today, you would sit there and think she was own something. Well, Mildred wasn't, you know. I mean, we didn't hear about steroids and all that back in the day. But back in the 40s and all, Mildred just had that. But she spent her time lifting weights and training and doing all that she had to do to be the best there was, you know. And she was and had and the NWA and the females. Now, what a lot of people don't understand, the female, they had three NWA women's belts. Mula's belt was the NWA belt. You know, Mildred Burke was named the Midwest NWA champion, which she would go from New Mexico up to California, all the way up to the Canadian border with the NWA wrestling everybody out on the West Coast. June Byers would do it from Texas. I think she went as far as Mississippi, or it might have been, she might have stopped in Louisiana, but somewhere around there where she would go Texas and straight up and do the central part of the U.S. And June Byers was NWA, and Mildred Burke was undefeated, and June Byers was undefeated. Now, when those two wrestled together or against each other, they normally were main event, and they normally went a 60-minute time limit. You know, and if people would look back at the way the females wrestled back in the 40s, 50s, there was cat fights. You could sit there and a promoter would come in, like with me, starting in the 60s, and said, you know, I want you to stay in the ring for at least 10 minutes. Well, me being as green and new, I wouldn't realize how much time had gone, but people that had been around for 10 or 15 years, they would either have the timekeeper, and they used to have the timekeeper announce the time, so when you heard 9 minutes, you knew that it was, you know, pretty close. You could end up trying to grab a hold to either get a submission hold on or go for the finishing move that you had. I said, with that, Mildred and them, you'd see the cat fight with June Byers. I seen her fight Penny Banner and Betty Clark, and you'd sit there and say 10 or 12 minutes, and then you'd see the cat fight come out. You know, I mean, it was thrown by the hair and just unbelievable moves in these matches from the 40s and the 50s.
Right. Now, Penny Banner, that's a name that really rings the bell for me, because if I'm not mistaken, she did a lot of wrestling in the Southeast, correct?
Yes. Yes.
And I have heard, and I guess I'll go ahead and confirm it with you, was she actually married to Johnny Weaver, the wrestler?
Yes, she was. He was working in Minnesota whenever they met, and they got married, and she chose that whenever she got married that she would be the one that would put her wrestling career on hold to have the family, and they had one daughter, Wendy. And I'm friends with Wendy, the daughter, and we keep in contact with each other. Wendy never got into wrestling. And, you know, it wasn't, she's into horses and in the car shows. They custom cars, you know, it's not racing. It's a custom cars where they special paint jobs and all. But that's what she does these days, Penny's daughter and Johnny's daughter. With her husband. But Penny was, you know, I know there was a lot of things. She had 5 dates with Elvis Presley. Nothing more, nothing less. She was wrestling in Tennessee, in Nashville. And whenever she went through Memphis, he would take her out to dinner and come to the matches and see her. And that was about the extent of their date, you know, that he'd take her out to have dinner after the matches, and then she would be on her way to the next town. She was actually the PGWA commissioner, which was Professional Girl Wrestling, which I was the first champion of that organization. She was the first commissioner, and then when I got injured so bad, and they didn't think I was going to walk again, let alone get in the ring, I became the commissioner for the PGWA. Now, me and Penny both tried to stress that, you know, the promoter was wanting the females to be like the old wrestlers where we were, the one-piece bathing suits like we did back in the 60s and 70s, and not have to try to show our bodies off. That we wanted to show the ability of how to wrestle. And over in the UK, they have to wear one-piece bathing suits. So, or they get fined. So, you know, whenever Vince goes over there, he knows the girls weren't going to be in one piece, so he just goes ahead and pays the fine because of the suits they're in, you know. But I said, Penny, you know, we were close friends. You know, we talked a couple times a month, and was talking quite regular, probably once a week right before she passed.
When did she pass away?
I think it was May 17th of 98, I believe. Yeah.
I guess Johnny was still wrestling back then, wasn't he?
He had became a deputy, and he was still pulling some of the independent shows.
He was absolutely one of the best wrestlers that we ever saw. And did you ever get to meet his many-time tag team partner, George Becker?
I did. They like to play jokes on me because I was, of course, they didn't know I was young as I was. They thought I was 21, 22 years old, and I, you know, they'd all be saying, you know, why wouldn't I have a beer? And it's like, you know, I don't want the beer. Y'all have the beer. I'll drive. And they were always cutting up with me that I was their chauffeur. And then they'd both sit in the back seat to where I looked like the chauffeur driving them. You know, and I thought, y'all are being mean, you know, after the matches and stuff.
Yeah.
But I said, after they realized how young I was, it was like, well, no wonder you wasn't drinking, and I'm glad you weren't.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you got to hang out with George Becker and Johnny Weaver. Those are two of my favorites from back in the day.
Yeah.
I really always enjoyed watching them, and I had my parents take me to the Charlotte Coliseum, the old Coliseum, when they would wrestle the Infernos and all those older great wrestling tag teams. I mean, it was just incredible. So, who was your favorite tag team partner, Susan?
Sandy Parker.
Now tell us. I'm not familiar with Sandy. Tell us a little bit about Sandy. Where was she from and all that?
She was from Vancouver, Canada. She was trained by trained in Detroit under the Sheik training. I don't know who actually did the training there for the Sheik, but he had the school that the gym was below and the rooms were upstairs that they stayed in. And then when she learned that they were just going to be wrestling for the area that he ran is when she got hold of Moolah and come to work for Moolah. I think she got to Moolah in 65 or 66.
When you're talking about the Sheik, you're talking about the Sheik from Syria, the original Sheik.
Yeah, the original Sheik from he mainly stayed there around Detroit after. They'd bring him out all over the world, but he was stationed out of Detroit. Sandy, she left Moolah in 74, I think, and basically she just got tired of Moolah Last time I talked to her, which a couple of weeks ago, it was like I just got tired of her telling me what I could do on my time off. If I'm not wrestling, I'm gonna do what I want to do. And with me, I actually drove the wrecker for Mula's boyfriend at the time. So I was always working. So after I got tired of painting the houses and mowing the 25 acres. I figured if I was working, I couldn't have to do all the other labor for nothing. We did it and wasn't paid for it. She kept you on the road whenever she needed to have, you needed to have, well, if you owed her a bunch of money, you got on the road to where you could get her paid off. And of course you lived on her property. Now the last 3 years that I worked there, because she got mad at me because when I beat her there in Dallas in a shoot match, when I took the belt from her, which I took her belt, but the NWA recognized it as being her belt, but whenever they called Stan Mushnick, Fritz Von Erich, and said I'd beat her, he said, well, that's her belt, tell her to take it back from her. So Fred said, well, she can't, because this kid's that strong, she can't beat her. And I said, well, we got nothing to do with that belt, because it's not the NWA belt. It's, she had the belt made. And of course, her belt had her name on it. So if anybody looked at her belt, although it looked like the belt that they put on Mildred Burke, whenever I wrestled for Mildred Burke, she had called Sam Mushnick, the president of the NWA, and said, could she declare me the champion and have a tournament between her girls to see who deserved. Well, of course, I was stronger than any of her girls, and I won the belt in a tournament between all the girls that Mildred had.
Now, when was that? What year did that happen in?
74.
And how long were you the champion?
I was there for 4 months for Mildred whenever I decided, I wanted to wrestle full time and wanted to do more than Japan and Mexico. And then so I gave the belt back to Mildred and she called Sam Mushnick and said, Green's, stepping down from the NWA West Coast Championship, and he said, is she keeping the belt? And it was like, no, that I guess I could have kept it, and then Sam could have made the calls for that belt all over wherever I went. But I knew I wasn't going to be able to use it going back to Mula, because when I got back to Mula, Mula said, don't expect to happen what happened out on the West Coast to happen here. And I said, I never would. And then it was 2 years, well, a year and a half later, give or take a few months, that I ended up beating her there in the Sportatorium in Dallas and took her belt. And Ben Sr. had flew me to Connecticut to buy the belt back from me, so Lillian could defend her belt there in Madison Square Garden. And I've actually got a picture of me handing her the belt back in the dressing room of Madison Square Garden. But I actually, that night I wrestled Paula Kay in the garden, and Mula defended her belt against Vivian St. John, So that was quite surprising, because, she thought I was going to give her the belt back, but I had it drawn up in a contract in Vince's office that I got to get a picture of me handing the belt back to her, because she knew, Vince had actually said, what's it going to take for you to give her belt back? And I said, that's the magic word, give, because she couldn't beat me. And in the process, he paid me $1,200 I gave her belt back. I got the picture, and I didn't have to pay her PC any longer. And of course, she made me move off the property, and she still had booked me, and I got to work the younger, newer girls that came in that didn't really know that I was one of, they thought that I was worked in the office or that I was one of the somebody's wife that was there. They didn't realize that I was one of her girls that she didn't let live on the property.
Gotcha. That's very interesting. Now, in terms of that story, give us a little bit of a timeline from, you know, when you won the belt to when Vince Sr. paid you $400 for giving the belt back to Moolah. And do you have that picture, Susan?
I do have that picture.
Would you allow us to put that up on the website?
Definitely.
That is the most. That would be the most incredible picture in all of professional wrestling.
Yeah,
it really would. So now, what year did you beat Moolah in Dallas? What year was that?
75, in January of 75, and then it was May of 75 at Madison Square Garden, where. I have the picture of me handing her the belt back in Madison Square Garden. He paid me $1,200. It was $1,200 that he paid me for me to give her belt back. And then, you know, I no longer had to give her 30% of my money. For wherever I went, I kept my whole paycheck. None of the girls ever knew it because if I was on the road, she always had one girl that picked up the PC from everybody. But whenever we'd get in, I'd drop everybody off, and nobody realized. The old girls, none of them realized why I wasn't living on the property. They thought that I'd bought a house and I moved off, and they thought it was just because I'd bought a house. Well, yeah, I did, but it was because she told me I had to get out, and it was actually cheaper for me to buy, and then I was able to get some of the girls that were drill sergeants in the military. They moved in and took care of the place while I was on the road wrestling, so I didn't have to have people, you know, taking care of anything. You know, there was somebody there that would be able to watch the place while I was gone.
And how long did your association with Moolah last? When was the last time that you wrestled for her, with her, whatever?
My neck and back was broke in July the 27th at a boating accident, 79. Of course, she sent word by her boyfriend that was the best thing that ever happened to me, and I told Bobby to tell her I will be back. And then when I moved back out here in 87, she called me in 89. She was running a show at Fort Jackson and asked me if I would come and wrestle for her out there. And I said, you know, sure, you still know the contract's in effect, which meant I wasn't going to wrestle her. And she was using Lalani Kai and Donna Christiantello. And she sat there and started throwing a fit when she saw me getting in my red, white, and blue ring attire, because we was wrestling at Fort Jackson. And she said, you know, you can't wear that. You know, you're just going to have to. And I thought, Lillian, you know, and I've wore red, white, and blue since I started. You know, I don't have any other colors. And, of course, I ended up wrestling Donna that night. And Donna was so glad that she didn't, you know, that she got me. And I sat there and said, you got a choice. I either wrestle Donna or I either wrestle Alani. Yeah. Then, you know, makes me know, never mind, but I don't wrestle you. And then she was quite upset that I was still going to hold the contract that we had made in 75, still in 89. And that was the last time that I did any wrestling for, was at Fort Jackson in 89.
And you wrestled. Now, who again did you wrestle? Donna, and you, I assume, Donna Christian.
Yeah, Donna Christiantello, and I won. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think her knees had gotten so bad, it got to where that, you know, you kind of feel sorry for some of them whenever you wrestle some of the older ones, because you realize they couldn't move the way they did when they were so much younger. You know, because I can remember Donna Christensen giving me a run for the money when I was young. And it was mainly because of my strength and my height did have helped me a lot with Donna, but her experience that she had educated me a lot.
Gotcha. So now, once you stopped wrestling for Moolah, who did you wrestle for at that time? At that time and beyond.
I ended up going independent. I'd call the promoters and tell them I'm no longer with her. Joe Blanchard, when I got over my neck and back, he actually was the one that gave me my start back in 83 when I was able to start wrestling in after my neck and back being broke, because I was actually paralyzed. And I was told never to step in the ring again. And I ended up training my niece, and I thought, well, if I can train her, I can wrestle. So Joe Blanchard gave me a start. And started bringing in Gene Antone and Jessica Rogers and Evelyn Stevens and Barbara Galinto and all again for, you know, and saying that I was holding my own. And when I'd call down to or call up into Canada and all that, and he'd verify that, yes, I was independent. And if I said I would be there, I would be there. And I would end up wrestling the girls that were either in their area, or the wives of some of the other wrestlers at the time. I guess my biggest one that I went on and made an awful lot and toured an awful lot with after that was Rhonda Singh, which she went as Monster Ripper down in Mexico and Japan. And then she's the one that came up and was Bertha Faye, Dusty Rhodes, Trailer Park Niece for WWF, which I tried to tell her that Madison Square Garden wasn't as big a deal as it cut out to be. And she says, yeah, but everybody says if you ever wrestle Madison Square Garden, you made it. And I said, well, to me, the Cow Palace was so much more electrifying than Madison Square Garden. You know, of course, if you're laying down on the mat and you're looking up, there's five balconies up that you're looking up at that you can't see because it's so high up. But I said, I got there early one time and ran up there and looked down. And I said, we didn't have big screens back in the 70s when I was wrestling there at Madison Square. And I sat there and said, Gorilla Monsoon happened to be in the ring. And I looked down, they was doing something, setting up the PA system and having a sound check. And I said, he looked like a little mouse. You know, he no way looked like the monster he was when you stood next to him. And I said, those people paid awful good money to look like little specks running around there, because all of us were just 130 pounds. And I said, we always had to wear different color suits to where we stood apart. Where nobody had all black suits on or all white suits. And I sat there and said, normally I always stood out because they knew I was going to have red, white, and blue on. And of course, me being 6 foot tall made me stand out from everybody else, because I think the tallest girl that I wrestled was 5'5", back in the 60s and 80s, 70s
yeah.
And 80s, yeah.
I can imagine.
But
I saw
him. Yeah.
Now, Singh, when did you? I'm sorry.
I heard a lot. I Rhonda Singh, which was Monster Ripper, over in Japan and Mexico. I toured England, the UK, Africa, Mexico. We did Japan together. India. We went to a lot of places, places I don't even remember names of. And it's like, you know, how'd you find this place? And it's like, promoters, you know, would call, and if they didn't get me, they'd get her, she was from Calgary, Canada, and we just got to where, you know, we could, both were at, and being independent, we could go when we wanted to go. We knew when we were booked, and we knew when we weren't.
Right.
The promoters got to where they knew that we would show up. You know, you send the plane tickets and the visas and all, and you will have us.
Exactly. That's what it took. It really did, I'm sure. So now, how long did you wrestle? Basically, when you're talking about is when you were a full-time wrestler, correct?
From 71 to 79, July of 79, and then I was out for basically about 3 years because of my neck and back being broke. And then I started back in 82, did a tour of New Zealand with Peggy Patterson. Was over there 3 months with Ric Flair. Got to where she didn't want to go full-time wrestling, and that's when I was introduced to Rhonda Singh from a promoter in Rotterdam, Holland. And then we both, you know, was willing to do all the fighting we could. Then we stayed busy until she went to New York. And then when Japan and Mexico told her they wanted her to lose weight because they wanted her to be back to the shape she was in, because Vince had her put on 50 pounds to be Dusty Rhodes' partner in the process of her trying to lose the weight, she had a massive heart attack and died at the age of 40. And so I said that, I guess, I stopped my full-time wrestling in 92. It just got to where I couldn't depend. I was able to get other people after Rhonda died, but it just got to where I did it more on weekends and all at one full time after Rhonda died, because, you know, Rhonda was willing to go to Africa and India, and I was right there with her, you know. Give us our visas and our we got our passports. We're ready to go. Just get the plane ticket. But I wrestled.
I take it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
I wrestled, I guess, all the way up till 2007. Whenever I got jumped on my regular job, I was every weekend I was wrestling. From 89 to 2007, I was wrestling every Friday, Saturday, Sunday. From 89 till 2007 on the weekends, and that was either with Lalani Kai or Judy Martin. Yeah.
And we had a great lunch.
Lalani Kai.
Judy Martin. Yeah. And we had a great lunch with Judy Martin the other day. It was really great to see her. She's a wonderful lady, and I know she's a good friend of yours. And then, so you actually had a full time job there in the 2000s, correct?
Yeah. Yes. I was a building inspector and a zoning inspector for the city of Columbia. And in 2007, I got jumped from behind in the parking lot of the city offices, and then actually left for dead, and wound up in the hospital for 121 days, and 110 of that was in a coma. So, and they didn't expect me to come back from that either. So, you know, I guess. That was, well, Mula died in November of 2007, and I was jumped December 27th of 2007, and My broke ribs ended up rupturing my colon and my intestines, that put me in the hospital and then put me into coma for that long. But I spent 6 months out in Texas. My sisters, my parents had already passed away, and my sisters had airlifted me out to Texas to go through the therapy because it was going to be easier for them to do the therapy with me out there than it was for me to be here and try to get me to and from therapy. So I went home and did the therapy, and when I was able to get around and walk, I came back out here and then started wrestling again.
Once
I guess
it's in your system,
it's
hard to get it out.
Yeah, it's when it's in your heart, it's hard to get it out. You know, it's. I've trained a lot of people, and I sit there and said, you know, when I know that they don't really have it in their heart, tell them to go home and sit in the middle of the floor and have a heart to heart with yourself. And if their heart tells them that they don't like doing one part, you know, you like beating up on somebody, but you don't like getting beat up on, then it's not in your heart. You know, you got to take both sides of the coin, and getting beat up as well as getting beat and you know, doing the beating and I've had two or three that went home, you know, and one of the young ladies that went home had actually been at Miller's for 5 years. She came here and to work out at my place and train, and within 3 months' time I had her. We had five or six matches, and that's when I said have a heart to heart, and now the young lady is a doctor. You know, she went back home because both her parents are doctors, and she went back home and became a nurse, and then became a nurse practitioner, and then the last Christmas card I got from her last year, she had went back to school and became a doctor. So, you know, she realized that it really wasn't in her heart. It was just something that she thought she wanted to do, and she come here with a friend to be trained, and they're all, and neither one of them made it, you know.
Yeah.
Wasn't something that they really wanted to do.
But you did, and we're so proud to have you on here, Susan. I've really enjoyed talking to you. To get more details about those great years in ladies professional wrestling, so will you come back real soon and let's talk a little bit more about this great time period? Because when you mention all these great wrestlers, we like to talk more about them. So I'll do some looking at this show that we've done and get some more questions for you. And again,
right.
Thank you so much. It's just a pleasure. And we'll see you next time, okay?
Okay, sounds good, John. You have a great night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.